Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10x points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Holla talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking pressure to go paperless, the subprime tax, and a priceless privacy app.
You know what, buddy? Those are some of the stories we're going to get to. We've got a lot more to get to on this Friday flight. And by the way, we call it the Friday flight because it is going to be a nice little sampling of some of the most important financial stories that we've come across this week, the ones that we think you need to be paying attention to.
By the way, when I say priceless, I mean priceless, but I also mean free. So it's both of those things. It's invaluable and also doesn't cost you a dime.
A little double entendre.
Yeah. Yeah. But okay, Matt, before we get to kind of all the stories that we think you need to know about this week, I just wanted to quickly mention our friends Rich and Regular. They posted something on Twitter the other day that Zenni Optical, which you and I have talked about before many times, they make prescription glasses for VR headsets.
I did not see that.
I feel like I've known about Zenni for, you have too, probably over a decade now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Zenni's been the best way to save money on prescription glasses.
I'm wearing them right now, baby.
I know you. They look great.
Okay, question for you. Do my glasses look expensive? Do they look fancy to you?
A lot of the Zenni, they look kind of like Warby Parker vibes.
Yeah. So the reason I ask is because recently Kate and I were on a date night and we stumbled upon a watch club, like a wristwatch, like a fancy wristwatch club. I think they're called like Red Bar or something like that.
Okay.
And I was intrigued. And so kind of we're waiting for our table. So I got a beer and started chatting with them. Ended up talking with them for a while, like 30, 45 minutes. And I get to learn about fancy watches. Also kind of a dangerous conversation.
Now you've got a new expensive hobby.
These guys, they're just enthusiasts, basically. They weren't trying to sell anything. But I was talking to one gentleman in particular, and he was kind of explaining why he's so into them. He's like, it's jewelry for men, right? It's an accessory. He's talking about fashion. And he looks over at me. He's like, I mean, I see the glasses you've got on. I can tell you're a fashionable guy. You appreciate the nicer things in life. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, homie, these are Zenni's. I dropped $20 on these things.
Pulled the wool over your eyes.
I didn't say anything, of course, because I was flattered. But yeah, I've been a fan of Zenni for, if not a decade, close to a decade.
It's just interesting to see.
They're so affordable. And when I say $20, literally $20 for a pair of frames. You can spend a little bit more because you can get the anti-smudge or the
Let's frames and lenses.
Glare coating.
Not just frames.
On the lenses. Well, some of them are that affordable. But when you start adding some of the special features, then the price can go up. Like if, for instance, because you can get them tinted as well. That's how I have prescription sunglasses, And they are a little more expensive than the $20 frames, maybe $40, but still, that is so much more affordable than what it is you're going to pay going in person.
You go to one of the traditional eyeglass retailers, you're going to spend, I don't know, like 10x sometimes.
You're paying off the nose.
Even Costco, which is great when it comes to going and getting an eye exam, getting glasses.
Go there, like, for the eye exam.
Zenni's way better.
But not for the glasses.
Yeah.
ZennyOptical.com.
It was just interesting to see. Well, I guess it makes sense that you need prescription eyeglasses for virtual reality headsets.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But it's kind of cool to see
back to the original story.
Like, how far Zenni's come, right? They're so futuristic at this point that they're even making prescription lenses for,
I guess you need that,
futuristic headsets.
If you are into the metaverse, which, who is at this point? It's all about the AI, not the metaverse.
Right.
Zuck.
Sorry, Zuck. All right, let's move on to Matt. Let's get to the stories that we found interesting this week. And let's start with kind of a paperless conundrum. There's Citibank is getting hella serious about not sending you paper statements. They don't want you to be able to get paper statements from them in the mail. Well, how serious are they getting? You're not going to be able to log into your account if you insist on getting a paper statement sent in the mail. They're kind of doing this as a trial run. They really don't want to pay the postage and go through the burden of sending you that statement in the mail. And so this is, like I said, this is a test program they might be rolling out on a larger scale. And in some ways, I kind of don't blame Citi.
I totally get it.
I get why they're going for this. Because
it's a line item that they can look at at the end of the year, and they're like, all right, how do we increase profits? Oh, how about we axe this entire thing that nobody looks at? It just shows up in the mail and you just throw it in the trash.
Which is what most people do. Usually it's inertia bias that people say, oh yeah, I'm going to keep getting the paper. They just never go turn it off. Maybe they're prompted when they log in and they just like click the X button. But if you're a customer who wants a physical statement, you can print it out at home, right? There's like the PDF that you can easily print that statement out. I don't know why we need to get them physically mailed to us anymore. But the thing is, they also might be running afoul of federal law. That's kind of a murky point right here. It's and the way they're going about it, I would say it's kind of bad customer service. Instead of just kind of saying, listen,
I totally agree with that.
If you don't agree to turning off paper statements, you can't log into your account. That feels like an ultimatum that is pretty harsh, right? And so a lot of people are actually saying, you know what? I'm so mad that Citi's doing this. I'm leaving and I'm not doing business with them anymore. Instead of penalizing, they should be encouraging, right? Basically incentivize people with a perk to take the action you want instead of making it impossible to log in and access their accounts, which just feels ridiculous and uncool.
Sure. Well, it also decreases there's a lot of variety when it comes to how it is that people interact with their finances, right? Like, everyone has a personalized way. Nobody does it the exact same way. And when you turn off the ability for people to receive paper statements, you're limiting those healthy habits and behaviors that folks have developed over the years. And I think you can expect to feel people's wrath if you start removing some of the, or at the very least, you can expect them to jump ship, which
in my mind,
I think a lot of folks might do.
I would offer a little bit of incentive to turn them off, give them a perk, maybe some Citi points or something like that, right? But also start charging for those paper statements, because it really is a cost center for
Citi. A little surcharge.
So say, hey, listen, sure, $3 a month if you want to keep getting your paper statement. And for people who really want it, they'll pony up. And then a lot of people will say, wait a second, I don't want to pay. I just kind of did it because I never got around to not doing it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will then, I think, make a change.
They'll change it then. Yeah. Take the Frontier or the Spirit Air approach. Nickel and dime, folks. Let's talk about inflation, because it has not been tamed all the way, that's for sure. And I think in our post-COVID world, fun things, they have experienced some of the most dramatic price increases. So concerts, for instance, they've been one of the most in-demand purchases lately. And the price reflects that new reality. There is some truth to the fact that we derive more pleasure when we spend our money on experiences instead of stuff. A lot of studies kind of point to that. But when prices skyrocket quickly, like they have, it can taint our view of that experience. So, for instance, some amazing concert that you go to for $50, well, that might feel like money well spent. But if you forked over triple that, right? Let's say you paid $150 for the same show, you're going to likely feel different. And, you know, the only way prices on these fun outings stop skyrocketing is if we collectively stop. This was an article that was in the Journal, and they were basically highlighting how folks are, in real time, are realizing that they're having buyer's remorse, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing, because these are inputs. This is our ability to see, does this or does this not bring me joy, happiness, satisfaction? And then you can change and modify your behaviors based on those things. It's not a total loss, I guess, is what I'm saying. I think if you can learn from that experience and then just make different decisions moving forward, I think it could be a good thing.
Yeah, and I think it all comes down to value, right?
And what is it that you value? And the things that we value change over time, right? Yeah. Like we are
and the price point
constantly
we're
evolving.
To pay for things, right? And
sure.
So as these concert prices continue to go up, up, and up, at some point there's a breaking point for us as individuals and I think societally. But you have to say, like, listen, oh, Taylor Swift concert for $200? That sounds great. Taylor Swift concert for $1,200? Sorry.
Don't think so.
Love you, Tay, but not going to happen. That's really an individual thing that people have to come to grips with. How much is it actually worth to me? So much depends on how much you have in savings and how much you care about that event. But there's a lot of, I think, YOLO going on in this too. And then a lot of, like you said, buyer's remorse, regret at the end of the day for having spent that money.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Matt, there's a new app we have to discuss. There's actually a really good app that we want to talk about later. This is a bad app. This is an app that we don't want people actually downloading. I only found out about it this week on the site, The Free Press. And it's probably one that we should all be avoiding because it's called Flip. And it's billed as...
And not the Flip app that brings together all of the circulars,
right,
from
that's
local...
F-L-I-P-P.
Two P's.
This is one P.
Singular P.
Yeah. And so this one has been called the social media app for shoppers. And of course, you know, that there's like alarm bells sounding in my head as I read.
Sounds
that.
Sounds like bad news.
Yeah. On the site, it says you can get rewarded for shopping and for thinking about shopping, which cannot be good. it's booming, though, because of the ability for users to refer their friends for large amounts of credit to spend on the app. And so, because it's like, oh, I can get like $40 to spend on this app if I refer my friends. Somebody, the author on the article in the Free Press, Matt, said if she referred all her friends, she'd have like $40,000 to spend on the app.
And flip credit.
Which is amazing. And flip credits, yeah, which that's a lot of money. So it's spreading like wildfire because of that. But like we've talked about kind of the social mediaification of other apps, like one for investing and making money transfers. Public is the one for investing where it's like, oh, invest in this social media awesome way. Or Venmo, it's like, make everyone aware of every money transfer you ever make, which is so weird. It's like this dystopian future we deserve in a country obsessed with consumerism to extend that all the way to shopping. To me, it's kind of like a QVC-esque product.
Oh yeah,
like a little blast from the past, but in this new packaging. And I haven't tried Flip personally. I don't plan on it, but from everything I've read, it sounds incredibly frightening. And so I'd be curious to know if any How to Money listeners are using it. If you think we're way off, please reach out to us and tell us if we're wrong. But I feel like this app has a mega ability to derail people's ability to achieve their savings and investing goals because they're spending too much time on the app, spending more money than they'd otherwise planned.
Yeah, I was actually going to use this opportunity to share my Flip referral link, but based on how you've approached it, yeah, I'm going to choose not to.
Hey, man, you could have made big bucks from it.
$40,000. Yep. No, I mean, kind of going back to the previous story where we're talking about...
Just have to lose all credibility simultaneously.
Buyer's remorse. Like, what I hate about this, like, yes, I bet there are some deals to be found on there. Yes, like, it's not like it's a scam. There are actual dollars credit, you know, Flip credit or whatever. We don't know. We haven't downloaded it. But you can actually earn these dollars and you can buy actual products. And I'm sure there's a lot of folks who might say, oh, no, this is legit, for real. Like, I was able to get this, this, and this. But what I hate about this is that it is feeding individuals products that they think that they need, that they think are going to actually make them happy and provide fulfillment, but they're not.
Yeah.
Again, going back to the buyer's remorse, we think that products are the answer, when in reality, what is it that brings people the most life satisfaction? Oftentimes, it's meaningful relationships. And this is... kind of does the exact opposite of that, because what you're doing is you're like harvesting your friends,
yeah,
as opposed to real actual lasting friendships. You're selling out and you're undermining your ability to have actual happiness because you're not partaking in actual relationships. You're just referral links and sending messages off to people you haven't been in touch with for a couple years. It like poisons the water.
Yeah.
It poisons the well. And that's the sort of the saddest part,
sure,
about this,
yeah,
is that we think it's going to make us happy, but in reality, it's probably going to lead to the exact opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other thing that makes us happy is free time. And guess what? We have more free time when we spend less money.
If you're not sitting there,
yeah,
like glued to the screen trying to find the next deal.
And you might not have to work as much if you're not spending as much, right?
100%.
But yeah, this is truly like concerning to me, seeing an app like this spread like wildfire, because it's antithetical to what I think is good. It makes me think of a conversation that you and I had a long time ago with Joshua Becker about minimalism. And my goodness, we could all stand for a dose of that again, because I think he's right on the money when it comes to fewer possessions are actually going to lead to increased amounts of happiness and a life that's centered around the things that matter more.
Yeah. Yeah. So I hadn't thought about him in forever, but it's not just the time that you're spending earning the money that you're going to then spend to buy the stuff. It's not just the time that you are wasting away as you're scrolling through products. It's also the time on the back end when you have a garage full of all this crap.
Yes.
And that was Joshua Becker's story.
That's
where
right.
His son is wanting to play with him. And he's like, no, we got to clean out the garage. And then he finally realized, wait a minute, why do I have all of this stuff? You know, we've all got garages or closets or attics full of all this crap that we don't need and that we don't value.
It's okay to have a few bins of Christmas items and stuff like that. Like, not hating on that, but do we overdo it?
As a country, I think we absolutely overdo it.
95% of us, if we're honest, we could pare back and we could. What was it? We talked about junk last week, Matt, and that Atlantic article. It'd be better if we would just avoid it in the first place, because guess what? We're going to spend the money. We're going to get the thing. We're not going to enjoy it as much as we thought. Then it's going to end up at the Goodwill anyway.
Yeah. Unless you do actually need something, and the goal there then, of course, is to spend less getting that item. Have you heard of dupes?
Oh, I saw this.
So dupes, it's like
hot new trend.
As opposed to...
Because we're up on all the hot new trends.
As opposed to like knockoffs where you've got an item that looks like it's a name brand item and it's got like the fake, Gucci the fake Supreme or whatever that's on there.
But it's like massively inferior, poorly made.
Yeah, it's a piece of junk. Yeah. Whereas dupes, they seem like they're more... It's like a movement towards decently quality goods, but without the label, which I am all about. It seems like it's become more of a TikTok trend. And it kind of seems like the TikTok generation, their ability to provide language to the old school idea of generic brands or store brands, which is fine.
Yeah.
You want to call them dupes instead of store brand? That's fine with me, if that means you're not spending money that you don't have to buy stuff you don't need to impress people you don't care about, then more power to you.
What makes me think of my grandpa, who when he would buy a car, he would actually take off the Ford emblem or the Toyota emblem.
Yeah, dude, I love that.
He would pry that off because he was like, that's free advertising for the car company. I'm not giving it to them. And so it was kind of like his version of a dupe like 50 years ago.
Take me back in time. I would have had a beer with your grandfather.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
That was totally me as a kid as well. Not to the point, catch me if you can, you remember? That was one of his, he'd like pull the labels off stuff. I was almost to that extent. As a kid, removing with a stitch ripper, pulling all labels off.
That's how I feel about clothes now. I'm like, I would prefer zero branding at all on anything.
The fewer the labels,
the
better.
For sure.
In my opinion.
I don't want to signal anything to people based on the thing. It's not that I don't care about my style, but I don't care about signaling via labels or brand names.
Conspicuous consumption.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about buy now, pay later for a second, Matt. There are new stats that find that more people are using buy now, pay later, which is something we have talk smack about for quite a long time. They're using it now for holiday travel. And I don't want to dwell on this because, again, we do talk about this kind of regularly, and you kind of know our take, but 1 in 5 Americans are planning to pay that plane ticket off over time instead of all at once. So these stats they make me sad. They make me nervous at the same time, too. And we certainly don't want you doing it with jeans or a sweater, buying just the clothing items over in installments. But those airline tickets, man, those could easily cross the 4-digit threshold for a lot of families.
For sure.
Family of 4, family of 5. Traveling, you could be talking about $1,500 or something like that.
Family of 6. Why do you think our kids have never flown anywhere, dude?
That's right. Then you're talking about $30,000 for one flight to Oklahoma or something like that. And I get the desire to not feel the full impact of that purchase in one fell swoop. But buy now, pay later, it just makes it so much easier to spend more than you otherwise would. And I know this is going to sound old school. I'm okay with that. But if you don't have the money on hand, you can't afford it. And buy now, pay later might seem like a great option, allowing you to take that trip, to get the family where you want to go for the holidays. But the behavioral ramifications, becoming more of a payment buyer, this has long-lasting negative impacts on most buy now, pay later users. They become addicted to it. And Matt, all the stats show that a lot of high earners are using buy now, pay later, and they're kind of getting on that month-to-month cycle. A lot of people getting overwhelmed by all the buy now, pay later purchases that they've been making, and buy now, pay later is just extending into other parts of the economy, which is just bad, bad news.
Yeah, yeah. Six-figure earners are not immune to the trap of consumption. And Apple, of course, they have been getting into the game as well. They've got their pay later feature. It started out initially as a test. Now it is available nationwide. And broadly speaking, Apple's migration into the financial space, it's kind of been good and bad. Like, so the savings account is solid. Mm-hmm. The credit card isn't bad either. You can get 2% rewards when you buy anything with Apple Pay, which is accepted basically everywhere.
And 2% is basically the upper echelon of what credit cards offer. It's what the Fidelity card has, the Citi mm-hmm. Double Cash, which are two cards we love. So
unless you're going to nerd out even more and really do a deep dive into individual categories. But Pay Later, of course, is an offering that we want you to turn down. When we talk about the holiday debt hangover that so many folks experience in January, that's usually referring to credit card debt, and we want you to avoid that too. But buy now, pay later payments extending into spring, we feel that those are going to be a rude awakening for a lot of folks. We mm-hmm. don't want you to be one of those folks. And as we were kind of reading more about Apple Pay or Pay Later specifically, and I noticed one thing is that they were saying how you need to make sure that your credit is not frozen in order to get approved, which makes sense because these are very small loans, and in effect, even if it's a soft pull, your credit still has to be unfrozen. And so I went digging a little bit because this isn't something we've talked about before. And I was curious, does this also apply to the other companies as well? And it does. So Affirm, Klarna, the same thing applies. If your credit is frozen, you actually cannot participate in buy now, pay later, which is a good thing. Yeah. This is like yet another reason to go ahead and freeze your credit, because I think
froze your credit with TransUnion and they never actually did it, and then you probably can, right?
But I think it can be an incredible accountability mechanism to keep you from that temptation of overspending, yeah. right? Like in the heat of the moment, you might be thinking, I was going to hit pay now, but I was thinking about tapping pay later, but guess what?
So tempting.
If your credit is frozen, you will not get approved for that. So yeah. That's one thing you can proactively do.
For sure. All right,
keep yourself in check.
Yeah. All right, we got more to get to, Matt, on this episode, including how much is bad credit going to cost you? There's like some hard numbers on that we're going to get to. And what does it take to achieve financial freedom? Well, not as much as some of our friends might lead you to believe. We'll get to that and more right after this.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
All right, Joel. We're back. We've got plenty more topics to get to. And of course, it is now time for the ludicrous headline of the week. This week's comes from CNBC, and the headline reads, "It may take $10 million to achieve financial freedom," says Earn Your Leisure hosts. And of course, this is going to sound incredibly demoralizing to, I'm going to guess, 95% of the country, 95% of folks
at least,
who have $80,000 or less set aside in their retirement accounts.
To hear a financial expert say you need $10 million to achieve financial freedom, that it kind of makes you just want to like forget it. Forget you even thought about it.
So, I mean, here's the thing. We've had these guys on before. We feel like that they're good dudes on a good mission. They care about financial literacy just like we do. But these statements are just so counterproductive. Because even if you do everything right, say you start young, you have a high savings rate, say you invest meaningful dollars in tax-advantaged accounts, most folks are never going to come close to eight figures in their retirement accounts. And we take the middle road. We like to have conversations where there's nuance. But I know that path in the middle between someone who's living that lean fire life where they're living in their van and they retired at age 30, they're a software developer on one end of the spectrum. And on the other end of the spectrum, like someone that's got a $10 million nest egg, we know that nuance kind of conversation is not going to make the headlines.
Yeah, nobody's talking about the average person who outsaved their peers and ended up with $1.3 million in the bank, right?
But that is, I think, going to be the situation that most folks find themselves in. And that is why we talk about it the way that we do. Because we want to highlight the fact that this is something that is replicable, that this is something that's doable, as opposed to maybe quickly skimming a headline, seeing a huge number, and then giving up before you even had a chance to start.
Which I think is what it does for most folks. A lot of people are going to say, that's not for me. I don't think I could possibly achieve that. So maybe I just need to nip it in the bud and stop investing if I can't ever achieve financial freedom. It only reinforces this limiting belief that so many people have, I think, about their ability to invest for and be able to achieve financial freedom.
Sure.
The truth is nobody really needs $10 million in retirement, right? If we're looking at the 4% rule for guidance, that means that $10 million portfolio gets you $400,000 a year that you can draw down and basically essentially never run out of money. And I'm not going to lie, Matt. I wouldn't be mad if I had 10 mil, I guess, in my retirement accounts.
I could find a way to spend 400K a year.
I mean, if someone dropped it in there, I'm not going to punch him in the face or anything like that. But there just aren't that many people who truly need to build a nest egg of that size. I'm not saying that you can't have big goals, that you shouldn't aspire to build wealth that gives you more options in your life. But like we talked about earlier this year, financial independence exists on a spectrum. That was episode 692. And I feel like that is such a powerful way to think about financial independence. It's not all or nothing. And that a goal of 10 million, maybe you hit it at 70, you achieve financial independence, and then guess what? You die, right? And so that's like a really crummy way to think about financial independence. And it's applicable to almost nobody. The truth is it takes far less than $10 million to experience the independence that Good Many Habits can provide. And while I love Troy and Rashad, they're good dudes, do not internalize this part of their message, at least.
Sure. And I will say the fault doesn't entirely lie with them, because in the headline it said that it may take $2 million. I'm sure there are some folks where it might take $2 million for them to be happy. And it's not even... Is it CNBC? Yeah, it's not even them, because like the headline's accurate. And so I think it's worth saying too, like some of the fault rests with us and how it is that the masses consume media. Because if you were to quickly look at that and not actually read it and dive into the details, you would get discouraged, right? Yeah. As opposed to, it's why we love podcasts. It's why we have a podcast, because it's the ability to have a more nuanced conversation. That is what we're all about.
Yeah, those headlines, they can be misleading, that's for sure.
Yeah, and they can just be polarized. Podcasts are like the exact opposite of Twitter, basically. and headlines are certainly more akin to Twitter than podcasts. But dude, let's talk about car loans, because most folks know that bad credit equals higher interest rates. That's definitely true. New data shows that auto loans are much more expensive for folks with bad credit. So this is one of our leading headlines in the Friday Flight this week. It's been called the subprime tax, because anyone with a subpar score is going to be forced into a loan with higher interest rates, resulting in a higher total cost of ownership of that vehicle. There's this app out there, Jerry. It's a car ownership app. But they found that the subprime tax has gotten even higher as interest rates have been increasing. So I guess it shouldn't be much of a surprise there. But how much higher will those interest rates be? Evidently 2 to 3 times higher than someone with great credit. And those rates are partially justified given the financial standing that that person entered into that transaction with, but they're often doled out in a more predatory manner as well, which is a big reason why it, it does not make us happy.
No, you're right, Matt. It's like the credit score equates to a big part of the increase, but then there's also the fact that you might also be doing business with a financial services company who says, you know, I think we can eke out an even higher interest rate than we would otherwise need to because this person is at our mercy, essentially. And there's so many folks with a bad credit score who haven't saved up much cash either, which makes it this double whammy, this massive conundrum. They end up going to a buy here, pay here lot in order to secure, to buy the car, to secure financing because they likely wouldn't qualify at their credit union, which is, you know, it's basically the most expensive option in existence to go to one of those buy here, pay here lots. Stats show that delinquent auto loans have increased too. You know, and more borrowers are just being rejected for car loans altogether. So I would say there's basically two takeaways here. One, pay close attention to your credit score. Work to improve it because a rough credit score is going to cost you in so many ways. Yes, a 2 to 3 times higher interest rate, which can equate to on like a $30,000 used car, we could talk, that could be anywhere between $8,000 and $12,000 extra in total costs over the years that you're paying off on that loan.
A lot of money.
That's right. So pay attention to your credit score. But better yet, save up more money so you can buy that car with cash, if at all possible, in the future. That goes for folks with good credit too, but especially for folks in that subprime range. It's like,
who are really paying out the nose for
it. The more cash you can have on hand, the stronger position you're going to be in. And even if you do have a higher interest rate attached, at least you're financing less of that purchase. You know, Matt, you and I, we still lean hard in the direction of like not paying, not having a car note at all.
Oh, yeah.
Like buy a car with cash. It's easier said than done. Not everyone can do that. I get it. But that is still the goal to aim for.
And I think it can just keep that car purchase in check as well, because it I think it can allow us to approach that car purchase with maybe the proper lens, as opposed to, of course, how much can I afford every single month?
Yeah. Which is how most people make the decision.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, what?
They're payment buyers.
How big of a payment can I fit in my budget, as opposed to how little can I spend so I can do a lot of other stuff with my money?
Exactly. Okay. New research from Pew. It shows how Americans view data privacy. And it turns out that most folks are confused and they're concerned about how private companies and the government is using our data. I think you can probably count us among both of those camps. The fine print, it just goes on for days. When you go to download a new app, you just click that box, check that box, you agree to it.
And you're like, what are they using? Like, what?
Who knows?
Oh, this free service that I've got, like, what data are they gathering? And it turns out it's a lot.
Yeah, and with credit breaches, like the Equifax one back in 2017, it kind of feels like our information is already out there in the ether floating around. So I think a worthwhile question is, should we just toss up our hands? Should we just say, screw it? Well, no, we don't think that that's the case, and we don't necessarily have perfect advice on this front, but like we were saying earlier, doing a credit freeze on the front end, that is one of the most important things that you can do, and I don't necessarily have data to back this up, but I think you can avoid the worst of what's out there on the web by making sure you've got strong passwords. We're talking about like data hygiene, but passwords that are maybe longer than like 5, 6, 7 characters long. I saw a paper recently where they're showing how 4 words in a row, so like a phrase, that password, because of the length of the password, is much, much stronger than like a 10-digit random selection of numbers and uppercase, lowercase, exclamation mark.
It makes sense.
It's all the standard things.
More digits that need to be guessed. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so like picking 4 random words can go a really long way. But it's just, in my mind, it can be incredibly overwhelming to try to think, how is it even going to be possible for me to fortify myself against all the folks out there who are trying to hack into my accounts and steal my money? But I think just something as simple as making sure that you've got solid passwords and that you're not reusing passwords as well. Because once there's a data breach in one rando crummy site that you happen to make an account with, well, once that information gets out there, all those hackers are going to try that same password with your same email on all the other sites that they can assume you most likely have.
That's why a password manager like Bitwarden makes a whole lot of sense.
It does.
It's free and highly rated. And so that's probably the direction a lot of people should go in. And Matt, on the privacy front, we should also mention a new privacy app from some of our favorite folks, the people at Consumer Reports. They just launched a new app called Permission Slip, and you can quickly and easily tell companies to delete your personal information and or delete your account altogether. It's pretty darn cool. I just started using it. Apparently it was so popular that the app basically crashed for a while. I was like trying to use it last week and I couldn't. And then this week I was able to actually get on there and do some stuff. And so if you try to do this with each individual company, there's like like legislation passed in a bunch of states saying that you have more right over your data, but you've got to reach out to these companies to basically say, stop using it. Well, if you had to do that on a one-on-one basis to all these companies, it would take forever. And so Consumer Reports is trying to make it easy where you can enter your information once with them and then tell all these companies pretty quickly, hey, knock it off. And we'll link to this app in the show notes. I, with you, Matt, I think I get the reticence and the confusion on the privacy front. And there really should be more legislation putting more safeguards around our ability to control who has access to and the ability to sell our data. But I would say don't give up. Do what you can with on the password front, on the credit freeze front, and then with an app like this from Consumer Reports, you have at least some control, even though you might not have ultimate control.
Yeah, and fingers crossed that they don't get hacked. Yeah. just like, I guess, with like the Bitwarden.
I will say, it's Consumer Reports, and they're so reputable. They've been doing great work for
so
long.
Yeah, they're a company the people.
If I trust anybody, I trust them.
Yeah, okay, so last story, we saw some crazy holiday shopping stats from Wallet Hub. A few to share with all of y'all out there. 1 in 4 folks are still in debt from the holidays last year.
Wow.
And that's pretty painful to hear. Evidently, 1 in 3 folks are going to be foregoing gifts because of inflation. That's actually a stat I don't mind, seeing the fact that folks are being challenged to potentially spend less, even though it's because of higher prices. I think when the prices of everything have only been increasing, scaling back your spending in a way, I think, can just almost prove to yourself that you have the ability to do that. I think it can be potentially empowering for
reducing folks. The number of people you buy for and reducing the price point that's expected essentially for some of those gifts makes a whole lot of sense.
Totally. Yeah. So we'll link to the full survey in our show notes. But it's wise to know what your budget is now and who it is that you're buying for before the shopping season gets pretty cray. We're actually going to talk with Julie. She is with the deal aggregator site Deal News. We're going to talk with her on Wednesday about how it is you can shop intelligently during this holiday season, where it is that you can find the best deals as well. So you can look forward to that one next week on Wednesday.
Yeah, she like eats, sleeps, and breathes deals. That's kind of her life. She's been in that space for a long time. She thinks she's going to have a lot of good advice to share when it comes to like, where to shop, when to shop, because that is, and like, well, what happens if you buy something and the price drops? Ooh, can you get the lower price now? She'll have answers to a bunch of those kinds of questions on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
But Matt, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll have, of course, links to a lot of the stuff we mentioned in our show notes up on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right, buddy. So until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Beat the train.
Beat the train. It's like we're back in Scotland. Race the Hogwarts Express.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeira. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.